Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes in out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
He's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
Canby City Council and its role as the Urban Renewal Agency, or URA, will consider next week two items that will help pave the way for the long-awaited Otto Road extension, a new street connecting Highway 99E to Molino Road. The project would also extend South Walnut Road to connect with the new street, according to the city's transportation system plan. The project would realize the long-desired goal of providing a new and alternate route for users of the Canby Pioneer Industrial Park to reach Highway 99E and regions beyond. And though some residents will no doubt point to the massive new Columbia Distributing Beverage Warehouse and Distribution Facility on the corner of Molino and Southeast First, now under construction, as the impetus for this project, it has been in the works for many years. The transportation system plan, for example, was approved almost a decade ago. Still, City Administrator Rick Robinson noted that new industrial development has made the need more pressing. With significant development occurring in the industrial park and increasing concern for the impact of industrial traffic on city streets, the need to prioritize this project has become even more apparent, he said in a memo to the URA. Robinson said that discussions with impacted property owners are already underway, as are initial surveys to identify the most appropriate placement of the roadway. To lay the groundwork for the extension, the URA will need to add a number of properties to the existing urban renewal district, and this is one of the resolutions that they will consider at Wednesday's meeting. The property would add about 3.7 acres to the approximately 471 acres of the existing district, which includes downtown Canby and the industrial park. The URA will also consider purchasing its first property for the new connector street. Located at 2392 Southeast First, the property would establish the southmost starting point for the new roadway. The asking price from the seller, Par 3 Investments, $595,000. If the city approves the resolution, it would also authorize Robinson to sign all documents necessary to complete the purchase from Par 3.
Sixteen-year-old Javi Eric, a junior at Canby High School, said just a few months ago that her dream is to win a gold medal representing her country in her chosen sport, powerlifting. And this week, she did just that. Javi medaled in two events, gold for the bench press and silver for the deadlift, and earned a bronze for her overall performance at the International Powerlifting Federation World Classic Championships. Her winning press was 102.5 kilograms, which, for all you listeners who are not in the metric system, translates to just shy of 226 pounds. Good lord. Her silver medal winning result in the deadlift was 369.27 pounds. That is more than me, and I'm a grown man. Good lord. If that's not impressive enough, consider that the Canby Cougar just started lifting a few years ago as a way to emulate and spend time with her dad, Doug, who is also a gym rat.
My dad, he's always been a bodybuilder, and I've always seen him go into the gym, and I've always wanted to go join him, but I was too young, so my 14th birthday, the only birthday present I wanted was a gym membership to go with my dad, and so he just started getting into the gym and working out. And then I got kind of bored doing the same thing over and over again, so I just wanted to try something with it.
You just started bench pressing your dad?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, he's my goal right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Obviously, she was good at it. She started breaking records in her first competition. Both parents, Doug and Christine Eric, joined Javi in Sweden. Not surprisingly, they're pretty proud of her. We are so very proud of Javi and all of her hard work, they said in a Facebook message. She's a focused and determined kid, and she sacrificed a lot to make it here today. She's bringing home one of each gold, silver, and bronze, but even so, one of Javi's most beautiful qualities is the ability to walk humbly through this event. Javi and her family are grateful for all the support of family, friends, and community.
Single-use plastic bags for groceries, restaurant takeout, and other retail items will soon be a thing of the past under a bill approved by the Oregon State Senate Tuesday afternoon. House Bill 2509 prohibits retail establishments and restaurants from providing single-use plastic checkout bags to customers. Under the bill, those establishments would be able to provide consumers with recycled paper bags or reusable plastic bags for a fee of at least 5 cents paid by the customer. Businesses found guilty of violating the new law would be subject to fines of up to $250. The bill passed 17-12 in the Senate, with all 11 Republicans and one Democrat, Lee Beyer of Springfield, voting against. HB 2509 now goes to Governor Kate Brown for her signature. Plastic bags are difficult to recycle and are light enough to be blown around easily, said Senator Michael Denbro, a Portland Democrat. As a result, they are strewn all over the place and are a common form of pollution in our world's oceans. They don't biodegrade, and so the only way to rid ourselves of them is to stop using them. Much like in the case of polystyrene, something we use once shouldn't be able to pollute our environment for hundreds of years. Canby State Senator Republican Alan Olson was one of the lawmakers who spoke against the measure on the floor in a presentation that included visual aids. He compared and contrasted the new, more environmentally friendly bags now used at Cuts Forest Thriftway with the paper bags the store offers, saying the brown bags also negatively impact the environment and are basically not functional when it rains. So what about those reusable cloth bags? Well, Senator Olson wasn't thrilled about those either.
These are kind of cool. They're strong. You can put a lot of stuff in there. But you saw where I got it from. I pulled it off the floor. Because that's where most people put these bags. They put them in the trunk of their car. They put their groceries in there. The chicken sometimes leaks, or the beef kind of leaks in there. And these bags don't get washed often. I look at those and it kind of creeps me out a little bit, because these bags are dirty, and they're sitting there where my food is. They're not very sanitary. And I would imagine if we could get OHA to go in and do a check on some of these bags, you'll find that they're really kind of filthy, because nobody takes care of them. They unload their groceries, they put them back, they pick them up, they put them in their car, and away they go, and they're dirty, and they don't clean them.
In passing this measure, Oregon becomes one of 12 state legislatures that have considered measures to regulate using single-use checkout bags. Maine enacted the first of these in 1991, requiring retailers to provide checkout bag recycling as a condition of providing plastic bags to customers at the time goods are sold. Other states have imposed bans or fees on single-use checkout bags. In Oregon, 10 cities have banned single-use bags, beginning with Portland in 2011. Each city's policy is slightly different. This bill is supported by the Northwest Grocery Association, primarily because it will streamline and create statewide consistency.
Summer is a critical time for children's academic and physical well-being, and during this time, children are at a higher risk of both obesity and hunger. For this reason, the Canby School District is sponsoring the Summer Food Service Program from June 24th to August 16th, offering free nutritious meals to local youth with no registration required. There's no commitment. Anyone under 18 can visit a site for breakfast or lunch just once for each day of service. Parents and other adults are also encouraged to accompany their children at the sites and can purchase meals for the nominal amount of $2.10 for breakfast, $3.80 for lunch. There will be 4 sites to visit for free meals, with menus featuring favorites from the district's National School Lunch Program and School Breakfast Program recipe books. The Summer Food Service Program will operate at the following sites: Knight Elementary School, June 24th through July 26th, lunch served from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Trost Elementary School, June 26th to July 19th, breakfast is served from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. and lunch is served from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Baker Prairie Middle School, June 26th through July 19th. Breakfast is served from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. and lunch is served from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Waite Park, July 29th through August 16th. Lunch is served from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. All meals served are limited in fat, calories, and sodium, with plenty of fresh fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, which meet the nutrition recommendations for a healthy lifestyle. This program served over 12,800 meals last summer and hopes to serve even more this year. For more information about the summer meals, you can call the Cambie School District at 503-266-6742 or 1-800-453-FOOD.
Cambie City Councilor Tracy Height announced her resignation last week, a move that surprised many considering she was only 6 months into her new term. But her reasoning made sense. Her work responsibilities have recently increased, and that, coupled with the demands of the City Council, was cutting into time that she would rather spend with her family. In a follow-up interview, Councilor Height reflected on the highlights the city has seen since she joined the council in January 2015. She didn't have to think too hard to name what she believes to be the most important accomplishment. The construction of the new library, hands down, she said. The reason I ran for office 5 years ago was to help shepherd through the building of a new library. It is here, and it is grand. She acknowledged that there is not much an individual councilor can accomplish since they have only one vote out of six, but she was responsible for recognizing Walt Daniels, who was honored for his decades of service to the city of Cambie with the Hometown Hero Award in 2017. It's something she still has fond memories of. She also noted the creation of the park's maintenance fee and the new splash pad that was approved for Maple Street Park. She said she hopes the council moves forward with the long-awaited Cambie Dog Park, as well as a park in the Auburn Farms development in North Cambie. Also important, she believes, was a controversial vote that paved the way for building high-density housing in the industrial park. The Sequoia Grove apartments behind Fred Meyer wouldn't be here today if it weren't for that vote, she said. That was a tie vote that the mayor broke. I'll never forget that night. She said she believes the new Dahlia building downtown will be well received in time, acknowledging that some folks in the community have struggled to come to terms with it, quote, because it is tall and seemed weirdly out of place to people at first. All in all, it wasn't a bad run, and she harbors fond memories of her time with the council, especially the early years. When I finally pause for a moment to reflect, I look back fondly over the last 5 years and remember my first 2 years on council in the old City Hall building, she said. That was an intimate space and is charged with a lot of memories, especially of me as a new counselor feeling unsure and like the quiet minority voice who is trying to find her way. The city is now accepting applications to replace Councilor Height. The deadline to apply is July 5th. Tracy's last meeting will be July 17th. Don't you hate it when you're just getting caught up on your favorite show and then your video streaming service drops it without warning? Wouldn't it be cool if you could record unlimited programs at once and watch them whenever and wherever you want? Meet Easy Video from DirectLink, the only app-based TV service in Cambie that includes most of the major live local broadcast channels, sports, and national networks. Easy Video is, well, easy. It's compatible with your Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smartphone, and laptop, so you have more options for how and where you watch TV. And the best part of all, Easy Video members save an average of $360 a year over traditional cable. Say goodbye to HD fees, DVR fees, equipment rentals, and costly installation. Go to directlink.coop/EZV or visit them at the corner of Southeast 2nd and Juniper Street in Cambie to learn more about the future of TV.
True story. When we first started the Cambie Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers, just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who would deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Cambie or online at ps266swag.com. What makes a dad? Author unknown. Read by Ed Grotsky.
God took the strength of a mountain, the majesty of a tree, the warmth of a summer sun, the calm of a quiet sea, the general soul of nature, the comforting arm of night, the wisdom of the ages, the power of the eagle's flight, the joy of a morning in spring, the faith of a mustard seed, the patience of eternity, the depth of a family need. Then God combined these qualities when there was nothing more to add. He knew his masterpiece was complete, and so he called it Dad. Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day, Ed. Okay. My guest on the Cami conversation today, trying to steal my headphones, is Terry Giesick, co-owner of Frontier Golf Course with your husband, Chris. Terry, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for asking.
Well, it's a beautiful day.
It is.
And we're talking about the golf course that you guys have owned for how long?
This is our third season. Our two-year anniversary was February.
Okay.
So this is going into our third season.
Cool. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about it.
We are having a blast. It's a lot of work.
Yes.
Chris works 7 days a week.
Yeah.
He's out there mowing and blowing and edging and fertilizing and aerating and helping customers. I help him after work and on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going great.
Yeah.
We're meeting lots of nice people and lots of positive feedback.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
It's cool.
The course has an interesting history.
It
does. One that goes back quite a bit here in Canby. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, the Sissels owned, and they purchased the property in the mid-50s and turned it into a golf course. The golf course itself is 50 years old. Yeah, it was a farm. That's right, a chicken farm. And I think they started with four holes, and it was just for family and friends. And then they turned it into they turned it into a golf course, nine holes.
Yeah.
And it's had its ups and downs, but it's being restored to its former glory. Mm-hmm. I think he would be pleased.
Joe Sissel.
Yes.
And it's an interesting course. I mean, it's smaller. It's kind of tucked away. It's not like professionally, designed or anything.
Well, it's all par threes. And so they're short holes, but it's a challenging course.
Yes.
It's not easy. The fairways are narrow, and you got to have a good short game to play and do well. So it's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. And it's beautiful out there.
Mm,
I mean,
thank you.
Tell folks about it. Kind of paint a picture, because this is audio. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, it's 10 acres, and the 10 acres it's a rectangle. So our home and the pro shop are on the front of the property that's on the Holly Street side, and then it just goes back. So the holes are just laid out. The nine holes are laid out. You can see now, because Chris has done such a great job of keeping all the trees trimmed up, and you can see a lot of the holes now. You can see people in the back of the course, but we don't have any sand traps anymore. It's pretty straightforward, just beautiful green grass, lots of trees. We counted, we have 100 trees.
I was gonna say, that's the first thing I noticed when you go out there, is the trees. There are a lot of them. They're beautiful.
Yeah, they are.
I'm not a big golfer, but that's not typical, right? To have the trees kind of intertwined.
I don't know. I don't know if it's typical or not.
Yeah.
I think it's beautiful, the way that he designed it.
Yeah.
It's not boring. It's just gorgeous. It's like a park.
I mean, it is. I think that's a really good way to put it. Like, you don't feel, I mean, as soon as you get out there and your first thought is not like, oh, I'm on a golf course. And especially for me, who's not a golfer, like, I wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable in that space. I go there, I feel like, oh, this is just a beautiful place. Like,
that's
what hits me. And it's out there on, out toward the ferry, and just it's beautiful out there in general with all the farms.
We're surrounded
Swan
by
Islands
farms
out there.
Yeah. It's just gorgeous. It's farmland all around us.
Yeah.
So it's always beautiful. Even in the winter, there's a lot of evergreen trees out there. So even in the winter, it's still gorgeous.
Not as much fun to golf, but...
Well, it's not, but people still do it.
Sure.
They still golf in the wintertime, so...
Sure. There's this great article that you showed me from the Oregonian from 1989.
Yes.
And it's talking about how beautiful it was back then. You know, obviously Kit and Joe still owned it.
Yes.
And when they bought it, it says here that she started to cry.
Yes.
Because of how broken down the 10-acre farm was in 1956. It had a dilapidated chicken coop, what the Oregonian writer here calls a malodorous pigsty.
Yes.
And lots of rundown pasture land. But the quote here from Kit is, Joe promised me that someday he would make it all look beautiful, and he kept his promise.
Yes, he did. Very Isn't sweet. That so sweet?
It is
I know,
sweet.
I love that.
Yeah.
And now Chris is doing it for me.
You have your own article in the Oregonian.
Yeah, right.
And it also talks about the sand traps that you mentioned.
That's right.
So it did at one point have sand traps. Joe Sissel took them out, according to this article, because he had was doing a tournament there, and he shot a 17 on one hole. Because he just kept going back and forth between the sand traps, and I guess out of embarrassment took them out. But he had a quote in there as far as just like, you know, he figured people can't come out here to have fun, not to get frustrated.
I know, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, what's funny is somebody in the meantime added two sand traps back, and then when we bought it, we got rid of them again.
Same hole?
Well, I don't know about that, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't remember the course. I mean, our children played it when they were younger.
Okay.
But I didn't know the owners then, and I don't recall there being sand traps. I didn't play it, did. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
So, tell me about you and Chris's, you know, why you bought it, kind of what your vision was for it. You said you're kind of trying to return it to its former glory, so it was a little bit of a fixer-upper, or?
I think Chris retired, and he'd been retired for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I felt like
he needed something.
He needed a good big project.
Sure.
And so this has been a great big project for him.
Yeah.
He's been a golfer most of his life.
Yeah.
But he didn't know anything about maintaining or caring for a golf course, so he's just
a
been
bit
teaching
of a
himself.
Thing.
Well, it really is. Yeah. So he's self-taught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's fortunately got friends that he's reached out to that have helped him, you know, with different questions and situations along the way.
It's a lot. What does it take to maintain? Is it a lot of just like having a really huge lawn, or is it?
Well, it is, but people don't like weeds on the greens.
Okay.
They don't want weeds or bare dirt spots, you know, in the fairways. They want it to be beautiful and lush and be like a park.
Okay.
So, you know, in the greens, it's very, very, very short grass.
Mm-hmm.
So it burns when it gets sunny, and, you know, you got to keep the right amount of water on it. You don't want it to get mossy.
Yeah,
there's
sure.
all kinds of little. And then people are rough on things too.
Yeah, sure it is.
Hmm. So just, you know, and then the trimming of the trees and, you know, limbs come down when it's windy and there's leaves, you know, when all the leaves come down, it takes him weeks to clean up all the leaves. You know, it's just an ongoing. It's fun though.
I'm getting a headache just thinking.
I know, right?
Poor Chris.
Poor Chris.
Yeah.
He gets really tan though.
Oh, I bet. Maybe not in the fall, but
he maintains it for a while. It's shocking.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Are you into golfing?
You know, we used to golf quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really anymore now because we're working, but we both enjoy it. Our family enjoys golfing still, and they come out, and when they come out and visit, you know, they'll play some holes and have some fun.
Yeah.
It's a good spot.
Canby is a interesting place with lots of traditions and stories and a lot of love for our community.
Yes.
And we have here a much beloved golf course. It's over 60 years old. There's got to be some stories and some lore. I know there's a goat of some variety. Tell me about some of the frontier lore.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
So that's a very new story. That's just our story.
Oh, okay.
Chris wanted, we would always joke that we had a dog and we thought that she would love to have a goat because she could chase it around the backyard.
Okay.
She liked to herd things.
Sure.
And
she a border collie?
She was a Australian Shepherd heeler mix.
Okay.
Anyway, it was Chris's birthday. It was right before we bought the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this sheet metal goat in a cute shop somewhere. And I bought it for him. Here's your goat. and the goat's name was Farley. And yeah. We decided that that would be our mascot at the golf course.
Yeah.
And so I include him in some posts and
everywhere.
Pictures.
Yeah.
And like then he kind of became, a friend drew the logo, so that was cool. So that's the lore of the goat, Farley.
What about this guy on your sign?
Oh, I wish I knew the story of that.
Yeah, it looks very almost Norse.
Yes.
Like on the sign coming into Frontier Golf Course.
Yes.
There's like this old man standing by a mountain, which I presume would be like Mount Hood.
Yeah, but, yeah. I love that. And we kept the sign because we love that. We love the older signs that are on the course that name, you know, that the frontier sort of theme.
Right.
Some of the signs are missing, but a lot of them are still there, and we're keeping them there.
So they're names after kind of the Old West name, like Desperado and Maverick and Alamo and stuff.
Yes,
like that. Yeah.
Exactly. So I wish I knew the story there.
Yeah.
Maybe one of
maybe somebody listening
to children.
This.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
maybe so. I'd love to know.
Or do some more digging through the Oregonian.
Yeah, office. There you go. You never know.
Cool. Okay, well, so that's some of the history. Tell us about Frontier now and what you and Chris are doing with it. How can folks...
We are busy.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. I feel like the word's gotten out and people have a great time. You can come and play nine holes in, oh gosh, if you're quick, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And... we have tournaments.
Yeah.
Some people come out, they rent the course for 4 hours or for the afternoon.
Yeah.
And we've got tables and chairs. They can barbecue. We have refreshments in the pro shop. So we're just staying busy, getting the word out. There's still every weekend people come in. Oh, geez, my buddy told me about this place. It's great. I didn't know it was here. So.
Yeah.
That's nice. It's nice that the word is spreading.
Yeah. And am I right that you guys are sort of going for that little more laid back approach? I mean,
you are right.
Because I'm not a golfer. I've mentioned it, I don't know, 16 times so far in this interview.
Yes, 17.
But I just want people to know that. No, I'm just kidding. But I have some buddies that are golfers. They want to take me golf. They talk about Frontier. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, this is it's an easier place. It's laid back. You know, it's not intimidating or whatnot. That's what you're going for.
I agree. And but what I like is that it's still challenging.
Yeah.
It's not intimidating because I think the fact that you can stand on the tee and see the flag and the green helps.
Yeah.
It makes you feel like, oh, I can do this.
Right.
But
it's just right over there.
But you can't.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's harder than it looks. True. No sand. You're welcome. No more sand traps.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. I mean, it's very laid back.
Yeah.
I mean, we want people to be comfortable and have a good time, and that seems like what they're doing. So
cool. You got some events coming up this summer?
We do. We've got we've had some great events.
Mm-hmm.
And the chamber tournament is coming up. The Swingin' Good Time tournament is June 14th.
Yeah.
And that'll be lots of fun. Rotary's held tournaments in the past few years. We've had a Young Life tournament.
That was the Hillbilly one?
Yeah, exactly. The
Hillbilly
Masters.
Yeah.
So that'll be a fun one. We hope to host every year.
Sounds like a neat idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we have a few private events that occur, you know, people that have rented for the last few years that are coming back again this year.
Yeah.
So people have a great time.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
Yeah, awesome. How can people check you out or find out more information?
We are, pretend like you're going to the ferry or Malala Street Park. We're just straight out Holly.
Yeah.
On the left side. Let's see, what direction would that be?
North.
North.
Yes.
We're on the north side.
Yeah, it's only taken me 7 months of doing this podcast to figure out the direction.
Good job.
So, yeah.
just on Holly.
Yeah.
Big blue house. And you'll see, as you come up Holly, there's all the farmland. And then you start to see all the trees. And that's the golf course.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Come in and check it out.
Yeah, and as we say on our ad on this podcast, if you hit the ferry, you've gone too far.
You've gone too far.
Yeah,
that's right.
Cool. You guys have a website and stuff like that?
We do.
Yeah.
Frontier Golf in Canby. Website. There's information on there. Facebook page, Instagram. Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else to add?
I don't think so. Well, I appreciate you asking about the course.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, and we're very proud of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really fun. I appreciate you talking to me.
Absolutely.
And, I love hearing the backstory of some of these gems, you know, that are here in our community and really help form part of the fabric fabric of who we are. I mean, it's so cool that, like, there are all these great farms out in that area as well that are very much a part of our heritage and a part of what makes Canby Canby. And then you're just, oh, and there's this amazing, wonderful golf course as well that's been here for 60 years.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks for keeping it alive and keeping it going.
Absolutely. So. Our pleasure. Yeah. Our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
For someone who enjoys a well-brewed craft beverage at the end of a day, living in the Willamette Valley is like living in paradise. There are literally hundreds of craft breweries, wineries, and cider presses producing amazing stuff right here in our region, and it can be a little overwhelming, but it's also exciting, if you have the right guide.
That's why we love visiting the FOB Taproom in Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway. They have over 36 taps of the absolute best craft beer, ciders, and wines, which are constantly rotating in a wide variety of styles. And their friendly staff has the expertise to recommend something you're guaranteed to love. They've got an awesome trivia night every Wednesday and other events happening all the time, so be sure to connect with them on Facebook so you don't miss out. See you at the FOB. Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined. Welcome back, listeners. I am here to introduce you to Katie Sigler. She is from right here in Canby, and she's part of a new group that is helping out some of our kids who maybe don't have a place to sleep. It's called Sleep in Heavenly Peace. Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I love that Christmas carol. Is that what it's from? Or?
I don't know. That's a great question.
Come on. You have to know this stuff.
I do like that Christmas carol as well, so yeah. I should know that by now.
Maybe we'll see if we can find some...
Something.
Some music to intro this segment from that.
That would be funny.
But, so tell us a little bit about Sleep in Heavenly Peace, what you do.
Sleep in Heavenly Peace is a nonprofit organization that builds bunk beds for kids in our community that are sleeping on the floor or couches or other unhealthy sleeping situations. And this Friday, we're hosting an event called Bunks Across America, and our goal is to build 30 bunk beds, which would be 60 kids off the floor in our community.
That's awesome. So it's a nationwide program, but it's new to Canby, right?
It's new to Canby, yeah. We started in January.
Okay.
Some of our friends have a chapter down in Eugene, and they were saying there's a need up here, and there's just nobody here helping.
Yeah.
And so my husband and this gentleman were talking, and my husband's like, my wife's a bleeding heart, so she will definitely be on board for this.
Right.
And I definitely was. And
yeah.
So now we're trying to fit it in between life.
Cool. So what is the need here in Canby? Do you have your hands around some of those numbers? Or?
Yeah, actually, I've gotten 14 bed requests in the last 7 days.
Oh, wow.
And so that is Malala. There are a couple of those are from Malala.
Okay.
A couple are from Wilsonville. But it's anywhere within 30 minutes of the Canby zip code.
Yeah.
But most of those are from Canby.
Yeah. So I, earlier today, literally just before talking to you, I had the opportunity to sit down with the homeless liaison for Canby School District.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentioned that right now there are 280 kids in Canby School District that are either homeless or have housing insecurity.
Right.
And I think that number is surprising to a lot of people because, at least in our community, and I think in many communities, it's invisible, right? It's not like...
Right.
It's not like a tent community, you know, where you see them on the streets or under the bridges or whatnot. They're in, you know, they're living with their grandparents or, right. you know, there's three families in an apartment or something
exactly.
like that. So you don't see them, but they don't, they, as you mentioned, they're sleeping on a floor.
Right.
Sleeping on a couch.
They're just, yeah, I mean, you know, this is something that's near to my heart because I was a child who struggled. We moved a lot when I was little. I had a futon for a bed for a while, a park bench as a couch.
And you were from here,
and I was from Cambie, but like nobody knew it. It wasn't something that you like go say, hey,
right.
you know, this is my life. It's right. something that you just kind of, you know, deal with and grow from. And
yeah.
So it is totally a present problem.
Yeah.
And it's such a sad thing, and you don't think it's out there, but it is.
Yeah.
And
how did it affect you as a student not having a bed?
You know, I worked really hard,
yeah.
and my mom worked really hard, and she did the best that she could.
Sure.
And I think it just made me stronger and work harder mm-hmm. to kind of get out of that life
mm-hmm.
So that I wasn't so financially unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it pushed me to be better.
Cool.
And
yeah, and that's often the case, right? It's not like,
yeah.
you know, the parents are working hard. It's not
right.
like, you know,
it's not like they're
they
just
don't care,
doing,
or,
no.
you know, like
no.
often these situations are of no fault of their own.
Exactly,
you know, so.
Exactly.
So this weekend, you said it's Friday or is it Saturday?
It's Saturday,
yeah.
June 15th
okay.
at the OBC Northwest, which is right behind Ace Hardware.
Okay.
And registration starts at 8:30.
Okay, so you don't need to pre-register to show up
If
that
you
day?
Could pre-register, that would make my life a little bit easier,
okay.
but if you can't, I understand.
How can folks pre-register if they do, if they are hearing, they're like, Katie, I really want to make this easy for you.
If they go to the Cambie Facebook page for
okay.
Sleep in Heavenly Peace, there's a little ticket button. It's
oh, cool.
not actually a ticket, that's
gotcha.
Just how you register.
It's our SVP.
Yes,
yeah.
exactly. Put all your information in there, and then when you come in the morning, I just check you off, and we'll put you right to work.
Cool. So you have all the materials there. You don't need to bring tools.
You don't need to bring anything. Just
yeah.
yourself. I would bring, you know, working clothes,
yeah.
but you don't mind getting dusty.
What if you are, and I'm just, this is just hypothetical,
mm-hmm.
but let's just say you're like almost comically inept with tools and building things, like maybe a certain local podcaster that I know of, but this is again just hypothetical. Would that, I mean, that person be welcome as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is not hard.
Yeah.
It is not hard. You can sand wood, you can put screwdrivers and fill the holes, and
cool.
it is super easy.
Cool. So you guys get these requests for the beds, and then what do you do with them? Do you actually just have them come pick them up, or?
No. So we get the request for the beds, and then I call the parent or whoever requests the bed and just make sure that the need is a real need.
Mm.
And then once that's established, we figure out a delivery date, and so then we send out a delivery team, and they take the bed with the mattress and the sheets and the comforters
oh.
and the lovies and everything they need to get off the floor that night and set them all up. So we don't make them put it together. We do everything as long as there's space for it.
Okay. One question. What is a lovey?
A lovey is like a stuffed animal or a blanket. So my kids call them lovies.
Never
one,
heard of that.
One has a stuffed animal, one has a blanket.
Okay. Cool. I like that, actually. I call them stuffed animals, but it sounds like a, you know,
it's not a
taxidermy type of stuffy. Yeah. Cool. And how do you, if there are folks in need of this, how do they get in touch with you?
So if they go to the website, which is sleepinheavenlypeace.org,
cool.
there is a request a bed. You just click on that and fill out the information, and it will go to whatever chapter is closest to you.
Cool.
And then they just contact you. It's super simple. It's not hard. There's not like 100 questions. It's more like, what's your name? What's your address? What's the situation?
You verified the need somehow. Do they have to have some kind of documentation?
Nope.
Or they have to be
no documentation.
In some system?
Nope. All we do is just call and talk to them.
Okay.
And so, not our chapter, but other chapters have had like grandparents that ask for a bed, but it's just for the grandkids that come once a month.
Gotcha.
And so where that is definitely a need, but it's not necessarily as dire as, say, DHS and foster care
yeah.
or kids who are in their permanent address home that are sleeping on the floor.
Right, right.
So we just try to put those, prioritize, I guess, the need, the ones that need are more in need.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time and for doing this for our community. And yeah.
Thank you.
Can Be Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily, find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. By using a little brute force and awkwardness, any 16-year-old schoolboy can manage to make a fool of himself. But when he assumes the role of husband for his school teacher, old enough to be his mother, he can sit still and depend upon being made a monkey of by 1,000 inhabitants of this community. Thus begins one newspaper's account of one of the strangest and most colorful episodes of Canby's history, in which local school teacher Rosamond Lee Shaw Samuelson scandalized the town with her initially secret but soon very public marriage to one of her 16-year-old students, Clifford Leroy Samuelson, in 1924. Rosamond was about 10 years older, which I guess makes her the original Canby Cougar. History does not record how or why the relationship began, and that's probably for the best, but we know how it became public. It was during a meeting of the school board in November 1924. Rumors had circulated for some time, as they tend to do in small rural towns. The two had been seen, according to one report, in various places late at night, and their conduct was not in keeping with that of instructor and pupil. Canby School Superintendent Gardner had been conducting a careful and quiet investigation, but when a record of the November 10th marriage in Vancouver, Washington was published in a Portland newspaper, the you-know-what hit the fan. Or, as the Canby Herald put it in the much more imaginative and casually ecclesiastical language of the day, the list of peril that pestered the Apostle Paul would seem mild compared to the pitfalls which await the feet of Miss Rosamond Lee Shaw Samuelson, since Superintendent Gardner of the Canby Schools opened the floodgates at a meeting of the board of directors here Friday night. Both Clifford and Rosamond had denied the union at first very emphatically and seemed indignant that people should suspect such a thing, but by the time the school board met to discuss the issue, they had changed their tune and the teacher admitted everything. The response was not great, as you might imagine, though she did have one supporter, Mr. Hedges, who appealed to the board to keep the woman on faculty for reasons that were never explained. For most folks, public sentiment seems much opposed to retaining the teacher, the Herald noted. The affair has stirred up a hornet's nest in the community, and Professor Gardner is receiving expressions of commendation from all right-thinking people for the work he has done in trying to adjust matters. With the entire town in an uproar, school directors had no choice but to dismiss Samuelson, declaring that, quote, her influence with the pupils was lost. I mean, I don't know about that. Seems like her influence over at least one pupil had just gotten a lot stronger. But anyway, that's only the beginning of the story. The following month, Mrs. Samuelson sued three Canby school board members, J.R. Vineyard, F.E. Dodge, and D.A. Deadman, for $25,000, the equivalent of $374,000 today, alleging that they had committed libel in the November 29th written order dismissing her from the school. The former Canby teacher accused her former board of writing statements that were defamatory and malicious, and falsely accused her of grossly immoral conduct and insubordination to her superiors. When the case was finally heard in January 1926, the trial lasted 3 days and included testimony by both Rosamond and Clifford Samuelson, as well as some 20 other minor witnesses. According to the Oregonian's reports, this testimony established step by step how the couple's romance had begun. That would certainly make for some interesting reading if those court transcripts somehow survived. A successful libel charge requires two elements. The written statements must be damaging to the reputation of the person in question, and they must be false. It may indeed be damaging to the reputation of Charles Manson for me to describe him as a cult leader and a murderer, but since he was a cult leader and a murderer, there's nothing he could do about it. In this case, the school board had accused Mrs. Samuelson of gross immorality, and so they faced a challenge of proving that she was, in fact, guilty of this. Their defense centered on the fact that she had lied about her age and the marriage license obtained in Washington. She'd said she was 19. Clifford had also lied, claiming to be 21. It was certainly an odd strategy. I mean, if a woman lying about her age represents gross immorality, we're going to need to start building some more jails, am I right? Why the defense, represented by C.D., D.C., and Earl Lattery, didn't bring up the immorality of a teacher, I don't know, marrying one of her students is anyone's guess. But the jury didn't buy it. After 5.5 hours, they returned a verdict in Mrs. Samuelson's favor, not for the $25,000 she'd asked for, but for $1,000, still a tidy sum in those days. The Canby Herald also covered the trial with their typical balance and restraint. The verdict came as a great surprise to the entire community so vitally interested in this matter, and it came unexpected to the attorneys for the defendants and to the people generally who listened to the evidence presented by several witnesses during a part of Tuesday and all of Wednesday. Even the most biased spectator in the courtroom after hearing the evidence could acknowledge that the plaintiff's claim had not been substantiated. The case was appealed all the way to the Oregon Supreme Court, who didn't consider the matter until December 1926. By then, Clifford Samuelson would have been old enough to marry whoever he wanted anyway. That didn't stop the High Court from, in a stunning reversal, ruling against him and his bride. The justices found that the Clackamas County Circuit Judge had erred in ever letting the case get to the jury because the plaintiff had failed to demonstrate malice on the part of the defendants. Mrs. Samuelson not only lost her $1,000 judgment, she was also saddled with court costs and attorney's fees on both sides. The townsfolk of Canby, who, as you just heard, were unapologetically in the school board's camp, had passed the hat and collected enough to help defray some of the costs of the district legal fees in defending the suit, but there was a balance remaining in the amount of $360.31, and this was filed as a bill against Rosamond Samuelson a few weeks after the Supreme Court's ruling. Not surprisingly, the Samuelsons soon left Canby. Rosamond served as a matron of honor in the wedding of Clifford's sister Edith, which took place on September 8, 1927 at the Sunnyside Congregational Church. Clifford himself gave her away. Clifford, if you can believe it, became an Episcopal minister, serving as a reverend of the Grace Episcopal Church in Longview, Washington for many years. Newspaper archives list him as the officiant for a number of weddings that happened there throughout the 1930s. One can only wonder how carefully he scrutinized the birth certificates. We have many more colorful stories to tell you, many of which don't even include school teachers marrying students legally below the age of consent, but it will have to wait till next time on Canby Then. So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved them $14,000 in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability, with a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people.
And also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Terry Giesick, soon to be based right here in Canby. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us.
Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episode.
Canby's legacy was built on small family-run farms, but we now live in an age where running a small family farm has never been harder. In our next episode, we meet a family that's doing it anyway. It's Red Chair Farm in Canby. With a mixture of patriotic and charitable events that are open to the community and a unique twist on the CSA model, the Paolo family is working hard to keep Canby's farm-to-table traditions alive.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now. Or to learn how you can start supporting our show and gain access to exclusive content through Patreon, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.